Hey, this is This Week in Self-Hosted. I'm your host, Ethan. Today I'm joined by YouTuber DB Tech. Thanks so much for joining me. Should we go ahead and get started?
Yeah, happy to be here. Let's just jump right in.
Yeah, cool. So for those who are just viewing this channel or this series for the first time, we're going to go through the letter that I publish weekly, This Week in Self-Hosted. David and I have both picked out a couple topics from each section that stood out to us. So we're going to just chat through all these things and just talk a little bit about what piqued our curiosity and interest as we went through. So I'm going to kick off with the first section in the news this week. David, are you familiar at all with GitHub's Octoverse report? Have you ever read it or stumbled upon it?
I have not. I've only started to recently kind of get into AI, so it's never really, and I know that's kind of the topic for Octoverse, but I'm not really familiar with it. No.
Yeah, so this came onto my radar last year, actually, for the first time. They do it annually. They publish it in October, and for the longest time, I was like, I guess that's why they call it the Octoverse. But mm-hmm. I also learned as I was researching this earlier this week that the GitHub icon is actually called the Octocat, I guess. And okay. So this is named after that, and maybe there's probably something to do with October and that cat and that icon. I have no idea. But if you were wondering, that's why it's called the Octoverse. but anyway, this is something they release every single year. And it's really just development trends that they've captured throughout the year based on all the projects that live on GitHub. And they talk about a bunch of different things. And obviously, AI is huge this year. I'm pretty sure it was pretty prevalent last year as well. But they usually have an open source section here, and I'm going to jump to that here, and I'm going to scroll down just a little bit. They give us a couple charts and a couple tables and views of the popularity of some open source projects, some of them being self-hosted. And Home Assistant, I remember last year Home Assistant made the list, and they made the list again this year. Here they're second in top 10 open source and public projects attracting the most first-time contributors, which is really cool. But then when we scroll down a little further, they're actually the top public project by number of contributors on GitHub.
That's amazing. Which,
yeah, I think that's really cool. It's over 21,000 contributors. I can't even fathom that number.
Yeah, trying to manage that would be several full-time jobs.
Absolutely. And I have to imagine that's the project itself and the operating system, but all of the plugins and integrations, I would assume, or what's attracting some of those numbers?
This is core, so I don't know.
You're right. This is the core repository.
Huh. So that if that's just the core, then plugins and add-ons and all of that number goes way up, I would think.
Oh, I can't even imagine what that number is when you factor in like the community store and all the stuff that comes along with that. That's crazy. And so we're actually going to chat a lot about Home Assistant this week. Cool. And I think actually I have my notes here. You actually a couple of months ago took the plunge into Home Assistant, right? I remember a video on your channel you were talking about.
Yeah, I did. And I tried to take the plunge a couple of years ago. And the problem that I ran into back then, like I think we talked about last time, was everything was done via YAML files and learning, you know, all of the different sensor types and names and all of the stuff that went into creating a Home Assistant specific YAML file. I wasn't in the right headspace for something like that. So I decided to forego doing that until a few months ago. Somebody was in my Discord, a couple of people were like, hey, you should really look into this. I think you'd enjoy it. It came up several times in live streams, like, hey, you should do this. You should look into it, maybe make videos about it. And so I was like, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to set up Home Assistant for the studio. And I'm going to come up with presence sensors of some variety so that when I walk into the room, all of my lights come on automatically and I don't forget like the hair light that's behind me like I always do. Or, you know, just forgetting little things here and there. So I got into it. And I was going to use an ESP32 as a presence sensor, and that was a fiasco. So I dropped almost a bill on an Akara FP2 millimeter wave sensor. At first was real hit and miss. Lots of updates since then. It's been rock solid since. And now my wife relies on Home Assistant. My kid relies on Home Assistant. It very quickly moved its way out of the studio and through the house. The front yard, the backyard, Home Assistant everywhere in this house now. And I'm really, really happy it's there.
Yeah. You know, it's funny when we talk about like self-hosting being a gateway to trying to save money, but then you end up spending more money than you're saving with not having hosted services. Home Assistant is absolutely that gateway, or at least it has been for me. It's like every time I discover something, I go all out and buy whatever I can to dive into that.
You know, and what's interesting is that you don't necessarily think about it at first until you deploy it, until you're like, okay, so it's deployed and here's like, it just scans your network and it's like, hey, here's some stuff I found. What do you want to do? And then you can go into, you know, the store and find all of the other plugins and add-ons and things that people have built for random brand names I've never heard of. But there are things in my house I never considered that I could automate. And I've come up with, you know, like fun ways to do automations that have bit me a couple of times, but it's like you said, you can absolutely go all in and spend a ton of money, or you might get really lucky and find out that a lot of your stuff is already compatible through additional add-ons and plugins and things like that. So it ends up being the cost of some space on your server, and that's about it. So it's the full spectrum of everything in between.
Yep, absolutely. And we're going to talk about that, at least the integrations, a little later. They released their monthly update this week, so we'll chat about that. I want to talk about really quick my last section in the news. I'm going to pass it over to you. Notepad++, which is a very popular program in the self-hosted world. I use it myself as well. Turned 21 this week, so it can officially drink alcohol on its own, which is super nice and convenient for it. You know, dude, it's what I use, and I was like, I should figure out what you use before we recorded this, and I went through your videos, and I could not figure out what you're using to compile. At one point, I saw you use some sort of Notepad-like application, but I couldn't pinpoint. So is Notepad++ what you're using as well when you're building compose files and configs and stuff?
So I used to use it. So when you see it, when I've got like a YAML file up on my screen that's like, hey, this will be in the description or whatever, that is a self-hosted copy of LenPaste that I use for that. But for everything else, I'll drop it into a Notepad and organize it the way I need to, and then deploy it, and then I forget about it and it gets closed and I don't save it, and then it's gone forever. So I'm super, super disorganized like that, but I used it for a long time when I was doing a lot of front end development and that sort of thing. It was just super easy to pop open and try to get my thoughts in order as far as how something should be laid out. I really, really actually enjoyed using that one.
Yeah. And so if someone isn't familiar with Notepad++, it's essentially Notepad on steroids.
Yeah.
And it has code syntax highlighting, so a lot of people who are writing code use it as an upgrade to something like Notepad. I think when I watch a lot of videos and stuff of people self-hosting and deploying things, I think a lot of people have shifted to tools like VS Code now for things like that, but I'm old school. I'm still using Notepad++.
You know, I've also noticed the VS Code thing, and like it looks like something I really want to do, but I know myself well enough that I never will.
So I think that captures me perfectly too. I don't know how you captured the essence of how I feel about VS Code, but that's about it. So you want to jump into yours?
Yeah. So good news, bad news, with regards to Proxmox Helper Scripts. The developer behind Proxmox Helper Scripts, T-Tech, recently went into hospice, which is devastating for the Proxmox community. He's done some amazing, amazing things to make self-hosting more accessible, especially via Proxmox and building LXCs and VMs and things like that very, very easily. Unfortunately, T-Tech went into hospice recently, and there's been a collaboration with Community Scripts and T-Tech to take over. So now instead of T-Tech obviously not being able to do that, now it's going to be more of an open source continuation of what was going on there. I in fact, the other day when this first popped up on my radar, when I found out about T-Tech, I immediately shared their GitHub post as well as a link to their Ko-fi support page, because I can't imagine what they and their family are going through right now. So I hope that the community honors what's been done so far and keeps that going as an homage to him and what he's done.
Absolutely. The Proxmox helper scripts, I've never seen anyone say anything but good things about them. They're super helpful for people who aren't as familiar with spinning things up, some of the more complex things. It will be interesting. I think T-Tech has kind of established a reputation in the community. And so this is one of the few projects where if I haven't used Proxmox for some time now, but never minded going into his repository and just grabbing bash scripts and running them to deploy things, which you're generally not supposed to do. So I'll be interested to see how the community maintains that, what sort of moderation they develop to make sure whatever contributions they're getting have been vetted and aren't you know, people being malicious with the things they're submitting.
Yeah, and it's an interesting segue from what we were just talking about. My home assistant was actually deployed with a T-Tech script. So yeah, like that's all running off of an LXC from one of those scripts. So no, devastating news about what's going on there, and I wish them and their family all the best. But I'm glad that this will continue to live on as a community community legacy, like it says there.
Yeah, and I'll drop the donation link in the description for this video as well for anyone else who'd like to contribute. I'm sure that would be much appreciated. But I think your note about Home Assistant is probably a good segue into our next section, which are software updates. So again, I've picked out two that have stuck out to me, and then I'll pass it over to you for any that might have stuck out to you. Kicking off with Home Assistant. Home Assistant had their typical monthly update that they publish each month. And if you aren't aware, there is a YouTube channel that I follow, and I usually try to include them in the newsletter. It's called Everything Smart Home.
Yeah.
They must coordinate with Home Assistant closely with their updates, because often I will actually see the video published before the actual update comes through, or the blog post from Home Assistant themselves. But it's a really cool overview of what the update is. But a couple things stood out to me with this month's update. I talked about how we're going to come back to integrations a little bit, and Home Assistant always publishes this nice blog post that talks a little bit about their the update and what's come through. But there were some new integrations this time around, and one that stuck out to me was an LG ThinQ, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. I think that's how I've actually never heard that said out loud, and I think about it.
I've always wondered if it was ThinQ or Think. I've always wondered that.
As I said, thank you. I'm like, I'm sure that's probably said think out loud. Regardless, this is a new integration, and it was actually built by the LG team themselves. So they make a note here. It's super nice to see a manufacturer providing an integration for Home Assistant. I found that super interesting. A couple weeks ago, I interviewed Paula Scoutson, the founder of Home Assistant, on my podcast, and he talked about one of the things they've been working on, or one of their priorities the last several years, has just been building legitimacy within the space or the industry when it comes to smart home products. And so they have their Works with Home Assistant program that's been gaining traction, and now there are actual smart home projects out there, products that have Works with Home Assistant on the box or on the website, which has been cool to see develop. And now I think this is kind of another cool thing that they have going for them, where there are actual manufacturers who are saying, hey, we want to contribute. We recognize that there's a demand for our products to be integrated with this system. I use LG Think. I'm just going to call it, I'm committing to Think now. I have an LG C2, TV, which I know is a very popular line of TVs. So it was cool to see this come up personally, but again, I'm happy for the Home Assistant team and what they've accomplished.
Yeah, I think it'll be neat because, like, right now everything's an overstatement. Most things are secondhand plugins, and I think the more that they can get direct buy-in by the manufacturers, I think the more that happens, obviously, like you said, the more legitimacy they will have, and it'll kind of snowball for them. And then we'll have a ton of things available directly through Home Assistant versus having to rely on third-party integrations that may quit being supported or may get overtaken by bad actors or whatever the case is. And I think a manufacturer buy-in is definitely the right direction for them.
Yep, absolutely. It's funny, I was earlier this year, I was researching for smoke alarms. I was trying to find smoke alarms that I could integrate with Home Assistant.
Okay.
And so it's like I would research a brand and I'd look to see if there's an integration available. And I found a brand that was like, okay, this is really good. I think they were Zigbee brand, but I couldn't find a published integration. And so I kept digging and I found some random guy was just posting on Home Assistant's community forums. Mm-hmm. And it was over the period of 2 years. It was just hilarious seeing this guy. He was like, hey, is there an integration for this? And it was crickets. And so like a couple months later, he was like, hey, I took a stab and I made a connection and a code. It was just like he was documenting over time until he got That's to this amazing. Point where he had an actual Home Assistant integration that... up and running. It's so funny, but also amazing at the same time.
Well, and I love the ingenuity of that. He's like, hey, I've got this problem. I want to fix this problem. I'm going to learn how to fix this problem. And then I'm going to share my fix with everyone else.
Absolutely.
I love that thought of community that he put into it. That's amazing.
Yep. The beauty of open source. So it's cool to see that, but it's also cool to see the manufacturers jumping in and getting involved as well. I'm sure there are other manufacturers who have provided integrations, but this one just popped up on my radar because it was something I personally use as well.
Sure. No, that's great. I dig that.
So, and the other update I'm going to talk to before I pass it over, there's a project that popped up a couple months ago called Caliber Web Automated. They dropped actually a couple big updates this week. They picked up multi-platform support. So if there was anyone running a platform, maybe that couldn't install it before, hopefully you can now. Came out with some fixes for Synology and Unraid users who might have been having some issues before, which Unraid and Synology are both very large platforms for self-hosters. So I'm sure that's huge for many people. But Caliber Web Automated, for anyone who isn't aware of it, is essentially a platform that combines Caliber, the ebook manager program itself, which with Caliber Web, which is kind of a side on or an add-on sidecar program for accessing Caliber libraries through a web interface. And so I actually have Caliber and Caliber Web installed myself, and it's always been kind of like both of them are nice in isolation, but it's always frustrating to have to kind of spin Caliber up, make sure everything's situated when I add that, and then get to Caliber Web and manage things that way. So this combines the two. I've noticed development has been very fast moving on this.
Nice.
They're constantly adding support. I will say I'm not crazy about the Plex-like interfaces that have been popping up.
Yeah.
There's another book, a book manager library called Kavita that recently had a relatively large update, and they also shifted to the Plex theme. And and I understand the idea behind it. You know, Plex is large.
Familiarity.
And it's an inspiration, but I'm not particularly fond of the Plex interface itself. So
sure.
I'm not complaining. It's, you know, free software. So
yeah, I've actually made videos about Caliber and Caliber Web as separate entities. And it was early on in my self-hosting and my video days. So I wasn't as well-rounded back then as I probably am now. But it was a nightmare to get them to work together for a long time. So seeing this makes me want to actually take a look at their kind of consolidated unified project there to kind of see how much better it is.
Yep, absolutely. I think it's absolutely worth checking out. I think maybe they're even picking up more features than you might have gotten with the two of them. So encourage everyone to check that out. But I'm going to stop talking for a little bit. I'm going to pass it over to you, David, for the updates that stuck out to you this week.
Yeah, so there were two. Well, there was actually a couple, but the two that stuck out the most, the first one was it's Penpot. Because as I've talked ad nauseum about in the past, I was a friend of, front-end web developer for a number of years. I loved doing it. And the problem that I had with it was kind of the one-sided nature of the relationship that I had in the business, meaning that it was my job to obviously build the interfaces when I loved doing that. But the other problem was that I had to then become proficient in Photoshop and Illustrator and all of these things, at least enough to be able to tear the designs apart to break out the graphics and put them where they needed to be. Fine. But our designer never had to learn a single line of HTML or CSS or anything like that, and I felt jaded about it. So it was funny because it actually, for you know, you get those random thoughts about arguments you should have had a decade ago.
Yes.
That had actually popped up as one of those arguments in my head a week ago or something. And then PenPop showed up and I was like, that I needed that 15 years ago when I was still doing this, so that the designer and I could work together on making sure that everything was pixel perfect and making sure that, you know, we could collaborate more succinctly rather than the Photoshop files on the server, go get it, have fun. Cause right. And it was a nightmare. And I feel like this could have saved a lot of relationships back then. So I'm stoked to see that stuff like that is coming into the self-hosted atmosphere versus having to pay for a big corporate project management file asset sharing solution. I love this. I think this is a really cool thing that they're doing here. I hope more people save relationships as a direct result of this project. So
I love it. When I look at PenPot, it looks like one of those applications. I'm like, I can't believe this is like free self-hosted open source software. It looks really cool. I've never used it because I don't have a use case for it, but it's one of those platforms that I wish I had a use case, because I look at it and I'm like, I need to have a reason to use it because it looks so nice to use.
Yeah, it looks like they've done a really, really good job on it. I'm shocked that this is self-hostable. It seems like this is something you would pay for. And I think maybe somebody who's been in that space realized there wasn't something available for, you know, small businesses or hobbyists or freelancers. And I think they've done a really good job at filling this, but they've also added custom plugins to this recently as well, so that you can add additional functionality as needed, as long as you follow with their coding standards and practices and that sort of thing. So
yeah, I can't imagine what that's going to add to the platform. That has to be big.
And what gets me on this, in fact, I think we talked about this last time I was on, not specifically this project, but this project's got 33,000 stars. And I've never heard of it until recently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was, I had one, I did a video of a few weeks ago, WebCheck, that had 22,000 stars when I found it. And it's just, it blows me away that there are projects this size that we've never heard of.
Absolutely. I feel like every other week someone comes and pitches a project to me for the newsletter for my directory. And I'm like, oh, that sounds nice. It must be like a, you know, new little indie project. And I'll go on its repo and they're like 50,000 stars. And it's, and I think, how did I miss this? Absolutely. Just like you're spot on with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So the other project, that stuck out to me a little bit, and it's going to sound maybe a little weird, was Hortus Fox Web. Because my wife is super into plants. She's gotten into plants extensively over the last couple of years. And the Hortus Fox is kind of a cool project where you can basically catalog all of your plants and then keep tabs on when you've done waterings and when you've done fertilizing and when you've done all of the different things that you do with plants. And I think it's very cool because as you collect anything, you want to keep tabs on where it is and what the status of it is and that sort of thing. You can add pictures of your plants. You can do all of these really crazy things with it. But they've recently added the ability to effectively use PlantNet's API, so you can upload a picture of your plant and it will tell you what it is. I haven't tested it enough to know exactly how accurate it is. But I love the idea of being able to, like, Like we went to a store the other day, and they had these really neat looking plants, but it just said like decorative house plant as, you know, in the little thing that sticks. And it's like, that's not helpful. Like there's no care instructions. There's nothing for it. So I'm taking a risk. With this, you take a picture, you upload it. It's like, hey, here it is. And then you can kind of go from there. And I love that they're adding additional functionality to this to make a hobby a little easier for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is great. I actually deploy a Hortus Fox. My wife and I bought a house a couple of years ago, and mm-hmm. we've been buying plants, and I do not remember anything about our plants. And so it's been really cool to track it. I will say I had not heard of PlantNet before this sure. update came through. I had to look it up. I remember my initial thought was, wow, PlantNet sounds kind of badass. Like, that's a cool right. name for something. But it's really cool. It's actually really cool functionality. The developer, Daniel Brendel, who you can see here in the repo name mm-hmm. up here, I've actually interacted with him a fair amount on the nice. Fediverse on Mastodon. Okay. And he's really cool. He always posts the updates, and you can tell Hortus Fox is a labor of love for him. So really cool. I definitely recommend everyone check it out.
That's amazing. I'll have to go find him and follow him on the Fediverse.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really cool guy to follow. So I jump into breaking changes really quickly, and then we'll move on to new software. We've also identified some things that have stuck out to us. Yeah. But for breaking changes, AirTrail, if anyone's deploying that, it's a flight tracking system. Actually, also another relatively new platform and really cool, especially if you fly a lot for tracking flights. So they've made some changes to how they manage and handle time zones. I think there's just some changes people should make when they upgrade to the version 1 release here. Also, congrats on the V1 release. I'm sure that's
absolutely
that's huge and a great accomplishment for any project. Also, recently, Endurain, actually just today, I think, dropped this update. This is a fitness tracking application. I think they added some cool new metrics for like logging different health metrics and statistics, which is a huge plus. But they had some database schema changes, so backup before upgrading. And then when deployed, there also is a new volume. So people will need to revisit their Docker compose or Docker run commands to make sure they've satisfied new requirements. And then lastly, if you're a Home Assistant user, there are some retired integrations with this month's update. So pay special attention to this. I remember, David, when you and I chatted through the self-host survey talking about domains, Google Domains keeps popping up. I thought they retired like a year or two ago. I don't know.
Right.
Who is still using them? But if you're using Google Domains, stop, find someone else. Stop using them so we can stop seeing this pop up, these warnings. There are a ton of good ones out there, so I'm not going to mention any, but do your research and find one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jumping into new software then. So two in particular stuck out to me. This first one, which is actually a very simple project. And for some reason, I'm just drawn to these. And I have a list of projects that look like this that I'm like, I'm going to keep this in my back pocket because one day I'm going to need it. And like 3 years down the road, I'll be like, oh, I really need this functionality. Oh, I think I have something for this. And so this is just very simply a project that replaces all the other websites out there that people go to when they're looking for a font. Where you can essentially load a bunch of fonts into it, start typing text, and just get a really nice preview comparison of what it would look like in different fonts. Again, there's so many sites out there that do this for you, but like most self-hosters, why rely on someone else if you can do it yourself? And so I thought this was really cool. I'll probably spin it up soon just to play around with it. So check that out, I guess, if you're into fonts and have some font comparisons you need to make.
I want you to do me a favor and open that back up. And then, okay, stop right there and look at the URL that's in that picture.
Postbaby.
He's the developer of Postbaby as well.
Oh, which is also popping up in the newsletter. I did not even catch that when I was building this. All right, so I guess I will jump. I will turn it over to you to talk about Postbaby, which I'm actually realizing I have a typo in my newsletter there. I'll have to fix before I send it out.
Did you want to cover your other one first?
No, let's just jump into Post Baby while I hear cool. while we're here, I guess, and we'll jump back to some of the other ones.
So I think it's a very cool project. I was initially put off by the name, if I'm being completely honest. The name, the font, and then once you actually deployed it, because I did, I initially thought it was something with regards to childcare. Just based on the aesthetics of everything. However, it's not. It's a sticky note application. in fact, you can actually click the postbaby.org right there, and that's it right there. You can leave post-it notes on there, and you could do something clever with this, like make it a kiosk app on a tablet and put it on your wall and leave notes for roommates or family members or whatever right there, just like that. And then when you're done, you can right click it and it'll go away, or you can hit C on your keyboard and it will delete all of them. It's just a real clever way to do it. And it's the aesthetic that's off-putting to me, in the sense that I don't feel like it represents what it does. It's great functionality. I just wish the aesthetic was different. And there's not enough functionality built into the Docker container at this point anyway to manipulate certain things like the background image and that sort of thing. But I think it's a cool project. I don't know. I'm stuck on the branding of it, and I need to get over that. But the functionality is very cool, and I could see a really great use case for it.
Yeah, I think I'm there with you. And like, I hate to talk bad about open source projects, because obviously, you know, this person has done more than I've ever done as far as releasing it. I think I remember if they shared this, like they were using this maybe to track, like they and their partner might have been tracking something for their baby, and that might have been the inspiration for it. But yeah, really cool functionality. I actually feel like I've seen another sticky note program pop up recently. There must be a high demand for sticky note applications, but they're all cool. So, oh, that's cool. It was resized.
Oh, I didn't realize you could resize it. How'd you do that?
I don't know what I did to resize it. I'm looking at there are controls down here in the bottom left. I was like, as I'm just moving it around, it's automatically. Oh, based on like when I hit the middle of the screen, it starts to.
Oh, all right. Cool.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay. So, Mark, developer Mark Ray has been very busy this week. Congrats, Mark, on the launch of your two software. The other one I called out was TextPod, which is a note taking app. And when I had found it, I think they had shared this on Reddit. They mentioned this was inspired by One Big Text File, and I'd never heard of One Big Text File, so I had to do some digging. And essentially, it just really is just one big text file for taking notes. You and I were talking about this a little bit earlier, just the platform I recently deployed to that we were collaborating on our show notes for today's recording. I talked about there's so many note taking apps, but often you're looking for like one very specific piece of functionality, and sometimes only one fits that. So if someone is looking for very niche functionality for note taking that might be satisfied with this, recommend checking out TextPod. So anything else stick out to you before we move on from this section, David?
Oh, you know what? I did actually have one other. I was Cloudflare DDNS. And I actually made a video about this 4 years ago. Not this particular setup, but a developer that goes by Osnu had one. So basically the idea is if you... let's say you're self-hosting and for whatever reason you're running your domains through Cloudflare, whether it's like your DNS, for instance, right? You wanna have Cloudflare's IP obfuscation, you wanna have their DDoS protection and their web application firewall and all of that. You wanna run all of that through there. Well, the problem is it's not uncommon for your home's IP address to change periodically. And depending on how you have your A records set up, depending on how you have your firewalls set up, things like that, all that's going to break when your IP address changes. And these Cloudflare DDNS applications, containers, whatever it happens to be, takes a look at your, it pings out to find out what your current IP address is for your home or your business or whatever, and then updates all of the appropriate records in Cloudflare to make sure your services don't go down and your firewall is still accessible and all of that kind of stuff. And I don't have a need for their DDoS service at this point because I use tunnels, but I'm stoked to see that somebody else took over a new version of this because OzNews hasn't been updated in like 3 years. So I'm really glad to see that somebody has kind of jumped on and started doing their own. It looks like they just hit their official V1 release about 4 days ago. So super, super happy that somebody is taking the reins on a new project like that. Also glad to know that we got in when it's got like 20 stars. It makes me feel like I'm still part of like the
yeah,
you know, the roots from which we all came.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're getting in on the ground floor on this project, yeah. I guess. It's funny, I recognize OzNew when you say that because I think I used to use OzNew myself for Cloudflare updates.
Mm-hmm.
I actually deploy OpenSense now, and then they have ways of keeping things updated. But I remember when the developer of this shared it online, I remember someone immediately jumped to their, I forget, what is it called? Is it DD client, or it's gone through maybe a couple different names?
Something like that.
There are platforms that can accommodate a number of DNS providers updating. And they were like, you know, what's the point of this? And maybe there's a case to be made in some instances, but I like the simplicity of this. Like, it is just a very simple script you run, very easy to configure, low overhead. So even though, you know, there might be tools that accommodate a wider range of functionality and domain or DNS providers.
Sure.
I think these projects are still great and shouldn't be glossed over by the community.
Sometimes just having a very simple application that does one thing can really save your butt. There are certain applications that I think have, to sound like my grandparents, have gotten too big for their britches. And they try to be everything to everyone all of the time, and it makes it really hard to figure out what their true intent is. Not, and I don't mean maliciously, but like, what are they trying to facilitate here? And it's just, you know what this developer is doing here. You know that this is their goal. This is what it does. Here's how to do it. And I very often love a very, very simple project like this that just does one thing really, really well.
Yep. I absolutely agree. Are you thinking of like something like Nextcloud when you say that?
You know me so well.
That is so infamous. And like, I'm not throwing shade at Nextcloud because it is a great platform and some things it does great.
Millions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, anyway, so those are new software for this week. Just have two more quick sections and then we'll wrap it up here.
Yeah.
Community content, a couple of cool things happening. Grist is actually one of those like no code, low code databases. They're actually sponsoring this week's newsletter.
Nice.
They have an event coming up. They're holding their first ever summit, which is really cool. And actually it wasn't until I started publishing this newsletter last year that I realized how prevalent the open source and self-hosted community is outside of the US and in Europe specifically. And I constantly see these events pop up for like Germany and France. I'm like, oh, I would totally go if I could, but that's a little too far for me to make the trek on my own. But if you're in Europe and looking for something to do, I would recommend checking it out. But I did want to go back to this first article I have here on XMPP. The forgotten gem of instant messaging. And I think this popped up on Hacker News this week and I grabbed it because I get a lot of feedback about XMPP as a protocol. I've never used it myself, but every time a platform like, I'll say Matrix pops up a lot for communicating, you know, someone's always looking for a Discord alternative. You'll always see like the usual suspects being recommended, like Matrix or Snicket Server or whatever. And there will always be a comment at the very end, or I'll always get an email with someone be like, oh, don't forget about XMPP. You know, it's very great and capable. And so it's like one of those things that, like, I need to spend more time with it and dig into it because clearly there's something I'm missing. And so I just thought it was funny seeing that pop up this week. So it's an interesting article on that. So if you're looking for self-hosted instant messaging and you have not found something to scratch that itch, this might be your solution.
That's very cool. That's very cool. And it's been around forever, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It might be older than me, to be honest. I'm not sure. I'm just going to shift to the last section. The content spotlight for this week was software called Koi-lection. It's a name is a play on the icon is a koi fish. That's why it's Koi-lection, but it's a self-hosted platform for physical collections. I think this is prevalent to a lot of readers because I think you and I have talked about this before. I think a lot of self-hosters have a knack for organization. There are so many platforms out there that are really about just tracking things. There's so many trackers. And there are obviously a lot of people streaming media through their self-hosted setups through Plex and Jellyfin. And I often hear the sentiment that people spend more time curating and organizing their collections than they do actually consuming the media in them. And so I'm sure there are people who will benefit from a platform like this. So check it out if you have a large collection of DVDs or Blu-ray or books or whatever that you're looking to catalog and haven't found that collection yet.
Oh, that's amazing. And I think even, and this is the old man in me coming out, like, if you had this documented properly, I wonder if you could use this for, like, say, let's say something terrible happened, you got robbed, your house burnt down. If you had everything documented here, I wonder how viable it would be for proof for your insurance claim. Random old man question.
No, that's a good call. I guess you would probably just need something in here to upload the actual
pictures,
proof that you owned it. So like a receipt pictures of some sort.
Dark mode.
Huh. That's interesting. I know there's an application called Homebox that people use for stuff like that.
I made a video on that once.
Yeah, I think people use it more for like, I don't know, like appliances and tech parts and stuff like that.
Sure.
I've never seen someone use it within the context of an actual collection of something.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Okay, so. Cool.
Yeah. And then I'm going to talk. I don't normally stop in the what I'm watching section. I normally just let people use it. But you make an appearance there. So I'm going to stop and let you chat a little bit about your video. And I will preface this with last Friday, I published my newsletter. And I think 2 hours after I published it, you published a video. And I was going to jokingly reach out to you and tell you to stop posting videos right after I post the newsletter. and post them before 8 a.m. on Friday morning so I can include them. And then I saw this one pop up again just in the last day or two, I think you posted it. So I was like torn which one to include in here. So you're welcome to talk about this one or both. Up to you.
So this one's kind of an interesting thing, and it's not a novel concept or anything, but I dig what they've done. Basically, So you can upload give me a second here. I'm getting tongue-tied. Okay. It's meant to be a password sharing platform. So you put your password in, you click go, and then it generates a URL that will then be encrypted and can only be shown one time. And very much it's got a long string of characters in the URL. Nobody's ever going to find it. But you can also share messages, anything in text, basically, you can share and you can say, look, it's a one-time read and it's gone no matter what. But you can also have it clean up at different intervals and things like that. It's one of those kind of, it's a one-trick pony, so to speak. It does one thing and it does it very well. I do have a couple of issues with how it's being facilitated with regards to the developer. And this is going to sound really counterintuitive. The developer is self-hosting his own Git repository where all of the files live, which which isn't great in this particular case when you've got to download the Docker file from his server, wherever it happens to be. It's a little slower, and you have to build it each time. So it isn't right. So I hope that the developer keeps working on it, gets it to a point where he'll put it on like the Docker Hub or someplace else, and is able to version it, because right now it's build fresh every time. You're not storing any data long term, so a rebuild isn't a big deal, but it's just super inconvenient to have to go that route. But yeah, it's a cool project. It works well. It does have to be like it has to be on an HTTPS URL. But aside from that, it's super easy to set up, and it does what it does very well.
Yeah, that's cool. And honestly, I hate to say it, but I do think having people build their own images actually scares a fair amount of people away. I know I hesitate when I see projects that do that. It typically doesn't just completely stop me from deploying something, but it's just like slightly less convenient than having something pre-built.
Well, and I agree with that. And also I've run into situations, not often, but I'd say maybe 10% of the time when I'm going through a build process and it's like, this version of JavaScript's no good. Cool. Thanks. Like, I'm not going to go back and rebuild the Docker image to fix this. Like,
yes. Yes.
So there are little things like that. And I know that when a developer is building their application, that them compiling it and then uploading it and versioning it and doing all of this stuff to put it on the different repositories and maintain it that way is more complex for them. But, if they're trying to build a community around their project, that's just something you gotta do if you want your projects to be more accessible to more people initially. Like you said, like, it's not necessarily a deal breaker, but if you're trying to get new people in, people who aren't familiar with self-hosting, and they see this build command and they're like, well, I don't know what that means, and then they just see thousands of lines of code scrolling past them and having no idea what's going on, it can be intimidating. And I wish more developers would get out of the habit of making people build on the fly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with all that, but I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, we've been very critical of a lot of projects
during this recording.
I feel very bad because like,
they're great projects. Like, they really are. There's just little things that I personally wish were done differently. But taken at face value for what they are, they're great projects. So I agree. I don't mean to talk bad about them. I just have opinions about things.
Yeah, no, I'm not criticizing you because I've been doing the same thing. I think I'm going to hop off here when we're finished and just go donate to each of these projects
to hopefully make up for it.
But honestly, everything we've talked about tonight, they've all been great projects. You know, we have minor nitpicks just because we're opinionated and, you know, we like talking about things. And
we're people. Like, everybody's got an opinion on most everything.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that being said, I think it's time to wrap it up. Okay. Thanks again for joining. If you would like to follow David and his content, I'm going to post some links in the description of this video to his YouTube channel. And from there, within his channel, he has a bunch of links where you can find all of his content, all of his socials. You can follow him. And then, of course, if you want to connect with me more, you can just navigate to my website, self-host without the O, so SELFH.ST. Someone has self-host the actual domain and they're not doing anything with it that I can tell, and I've tried reaching out to them and I've never heard back. So if you are listening to this, please reach out to me.
Please, that'd be amazing.
I'd love to come to an agreement with you, but
yeah.
Anyway, this has been This Week in Self-Hosted. Thanks everyone for listening. Have a great weekend.
Take care.